This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the RPM sub-team for URS practitioners, taking place on the 7th of March, 2018. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no one, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for a recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to Jason Schaefer. Please begin.
Thank you, and thank you, everyone, for joining the call. It's a pretty snowy day here on the East Coast, so hopefully we can move forward this pretty efficiently and get through this quickly. I also thank everyone who participated in going through the Google Doc questions and spreadsheet. Looks like we made some good progress there. So for today's agenda, we have two main points. To one, review the document which contains the edited questions, and two, to go through the practitioner spreadsheet, which includes the names of practitioners and was done with a nice data sort by staff, so thank you for taking the time to take care of that for us staff. It looks like everyone on this call had the opportunity, and many people did take the opportunity to go through these questions. If everybody, there they are on screen, if everybody can look at those questions. Looks like someone just joined us.
Hi, it's Greg Shatton.
Hi, Greg. So it looks like we made some great headway on the questions, everyone. So if we had everybody had an opportunity to comment, at this point I think it's a matter of let's finalize this list, make sure we have a comprehensive list, and then prepare for ICANN 61. So anybody have any further questions or concerns about the document in its current edited form? No? Okay. Does anybody have any further points that they would like to add to the document that have not been included or major points that might be missing? Okay. Greg?
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. I put in a few comments as I went through last night about questions that need to be clarified and a couple of things I didn't quite understand. I don't know if any of those were resolved after I went into the document, which was about 5 o'clock New York time. So if they may still be there.
Okay. I'm not sure anything was settled overnight, but if Greg, if you want to review your points, that we can go through them in order.
Sure. I think there are only a couple. Everything else I handled just as revision.
There's one question. Let me see which one it is here. On the I guess it's the is it the first page? I guess it is. Well, no, it seems like the page numbering is off. It's on the second page, which is numbered page number one. The question read, are you aware of any – well, I edited it to read, in any of your cases, did it appear that the panelists did not consider all required criteria – or did not address certain aspects of the ORS which it was required to do? My note is that this question needs to be clarified. Is it about the clear and convincing standard, or is it about the three-pronged criteria for a URS case generally? If it's not about clear and convincing, it should be moved out of the middle of the clear and convincing questions. The certain required aspects of the URS is unclear. In terms of what's meant by aspects, so I think we either need to clarify that or show an example or cite to what's being asked and where it's required.
Okay. Peter, get your hand up.
Hi, Peter. I made some comments, but can't see if they were actually... Obviously, I didn't manage to put them finally on the document, but I see that most of the topics I had has actually been fixed by others, so that's good. My general view when I read the original document was that it was not the questions were not formulated, so to speak, to someone to ask. They were more general, and I see that most of the questions have been changed to cover that. How do you? What do you think? Etc. Etc. But I still have one question, and that's on page 2.
Maybe we should hold. I thought you were responding to Greg's points.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Can we hold on that and just
we'll
get right back to that? Okay. So Greg, going back to Greg's first question on that point of should this be covering? Does this cover just the clear and convincing standard, or should this be more broad? That's a fair point. Anyone have any thoughts on whether we should move it?
It doesn't appear to me that it covers the clear and convincing standard as well at all,
right,
because it asks about all required criteria and addressing certain
right
aspects. So, that's
so I think that's a fair. I think we certainly could move it to the other section. Why not have a more broad question in the first place? I don't see any reason why not. Does anybody have any objection to including a broad question in the appropriate location? Okay, no objections there. So let's keep the question. Just make sure it's in the right section, so to speak.
Okay. Then the second part of the issue was to clarify what's meant by required criteria or certain aspects which it was required to address.
Okay, you're referring to required criterion. Okay, so what was your question with that?
What is meant by required criteria? Criterion would be the singular, so I corrected it to criteria.
Right. Sure, criteria.
But, so I'm wondering, what do we mean by all required criteria?
This is Kathy. Could you read the whole question again?
Sure. It reads, in any of your cases, did it appear that the panelist did not consider all required criteria or did not address certain aspects of the URS which it was required to do?
Okay, Jason, I haven't raised my hand. Can I try to address
please
that? This is Kathy. Okay.
Please do.
So, Greg, I think what was meant by that, and I don't remember who posed the question, and anyone feel free to answer, the three elements, I think is meant by all required criteria, but other people may remember this differently.
I think that is the case. That was the intention there. But
you're right.
So
we should clarify. If that's not clear to you, Greg, it should. Then it's not going to be clear to the people we're asking.
So we could clarify. I mean, with the word elements, or I don't know how you'd like to.
I guess we say that the three required elements.
Sure.
I'm not sure what the or is. The second part means if that would then be redundant, because it asks both, did the panelist not consider all required criteria, and then asked, did it not address certain aspects of the URS which it was required to do? So maybe this can be a simpler question, too, if we just ask whether the panelist did not consider
all elements,
each of the three required elements.
Actually, there'd be more than that, though, because of the use, the use in the SMD file, which play a special role here. So that may be a certain aspect of the URS
that
doesn't apply to the UDRP.
We have a separate question about that, about the SMD file specifically. And
right.
It's not a required element.
But exactly. So I'm wondering if the comma separates two different thoughts. So all required criteria we are now defining as the element. but or did not address certain aspects of the URS, which it was required to do. The SMD file is one thing in that category. Are there other things? So before we cut off that comma and the rest of the phrase, I think we may want to hold that. So in any of your cases, did it appear that the panelist did not address certain aspects of the URS, which it was required to do? Do we want to separate it into two questions? There may be something other than the elements that we have to consider. And I don't. Before we give it some more thought, I don't want to cross it out completely. That's my thought. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy.
This is Greg. If I could respond briefly. I think if there are other elements, we have to figure out whether they're required elements. And it would seem we're talking about now required elements for the panelist to address. So that's whatever it is, that's what we have to come to. So I don't think the SMD file is a good example of that. Or I don't think it's actually an example of that at all.
Okay, well let's present it to the group at this point. I think we have the issue of how do we tighten the language in the question. It seems like there is a debate on whether or not we shorten the question and focus it solely on the elements, or do we, looks like we've corrected some of that to just include the three required elements, and do we include either A, another question, or just tack on to here as other aspects of the URS to allow for a broader discussion. Clearly, the person who's answering the question is going to interpret this in any way they would. They're the ones interpreting the question, so it may make sense to keep it broad and allow them to answer. But I do agree that it might not be exactly clear what we mean by saying certain aspects. So, Kathy, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Just to posit that maybe we should divide it into two questions, and I don't think this is our final walkthrough on any of this. The other sub-teams are still working hard on their work, and it's my understanding that what they present in Puerto Rico will be an interim presentation for input, but it's not their final presentation. So I think we're actually ahead of the other sub-teams in terms of work product. So I think we're going to get to come back to this. Can we kind of put a footnote in and think about whether there are other criteria that we want to ask or certain aspects of the URS we want to ask panelists about? Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. I think that's a fair way to resolve this for the moment so we don't get bogged down in this. Let's maybe split it up, make a note to provide more detail and clarity, and then we can move on if that's okay with the group.
Father, can I just comment on this specific when we talked about how to show proof of use. I'm trying to scroll in the document now, but I remember from the meeting we were on previously, we also talked about those that have continuously used proof of use by printouts from their active website instead of using the Trademark Clearinghouse. Do we have a question on why a complainant choose the one of these methods of proving use before the other? We have, okay, good.
Yes, it's the first question under tactics and approaches.
Okay, good.
Okay. Kathy?
Thanks, Tasia. An unrelated issue, I'd love to suggest that we number the questions and before we present this to the full working group, because I think it'll make answering any questions that they have easier, because they'll be able to say, you know, such and such is section number 3, and we'll be able to get to it quickly. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. It's always a good point to make it easier to identify what we're dealing with here. Obviously, this document, the working document, is on screen is quite a mess with the different points and comments. But once we clean it up, yes, I think it would be a great idea to at least number things appropriately so they can be easily identified. Petter, you still have your hand up. Is it?
Once we're ready to talk about this line where the word limits are adequate.
Okay. Because Greg, did we run through your questions?
Yeah, I think that was the only one that was a real question. I'm just double-checking to see if there's anything else. But let's go on to Petter.
Okay. Petter, you have the floor.
Yeah, thanks. Just a question there about the word limits advocacy. All the other questions are rephrased as what do you think, et cetera, et cetera. And here we have how do brand owners and practitioners and how do registrants know about. And I presume that it's not meant to be general questions to all users. So I think we should rephrase the first one to if you participated as a brand owner or practitioners, how do you get to know about the existence of the URS? And how did you make the decision about, et cetera? And if you're a registrant, how did you know about the responses to the URS and the affirmative defenses?
Okay. So is that in the practical issues section? Is that what you're referring to?
It's on page two.
Page two.
Yeah, where the word limits adequate.
Ah.
Yes, practical issues.
Okay.
The second.
Anyone have any thoughts on that? I don't have a problem clarifying, you know, one question for practitioners and brand owners and one for respondents. They would certainly have different views. Anybody have any thoughts on that? If you want to make that change, Petter, I mean, I think I don't have objection. Anybody object? Or if you see any reason not to?
Sounds fine to me.
Okay. Sounds fine. If you want to make that addition, Petter, and you can you make that edit into the document, or can you clarify it right now so we could finalize?
I think the simplest way to rephrase it is if you're a brand owner or practitioner, how do you get to know about the existence of URS? How do you make a decision about whether you should propose a URS or just let it go? And if you are a registrant, how did you get to know about the responses to the URS and the affirmative defenses? Nothing like that.
Okay, so it looks like we have, right on page two, it already states how do brand owners and practitioners get to know about the, okay, so we
yeah,
can
but that's
tighten
more
that language a bit, yeah.
General, it's not, I don't read it as a question to brand owners and practitioners, it's more a general question. And, I mean, if we go through this for people to reply upon,
well, this is really a question going to the
brand
owners.
So, a simple rephrase that if you are a brand owner or practitioner.
Right.
And then if you're a registrant, and then a question.
Okay. This is just generally going to awareness of the process. Okay. Petter, do you have any other points? Is that your question? I know you had some
points
before.
No, that's mine. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I know that George, you had some questions that were in the emails. Kathy, I saw your hand's not up. Okay. Greg, your hand is still up. Is that from new or now?
Yeah, I found a few other little nits as we were going through this. Thought we could try to deal with them.
Okay.
One is under practical issues above the word limits question. It just says response fee for multiple filing. So the question is, what does this mean? How can this be turned into a question?
Okay. Fair point. I'm not sure where that came from. Does anyone have any thoughts on that? What was the question there? Are you aware of the response fee? What, does anybody know anything about this? No? Okay, let's try to divine what was meant here. Okay, so nobody's claiming. George? You look like you may be on mute still.
Hey, how are you?
There you go.
This is George Lynch. I was just putting myself in the queue for discussing these additional points, but not this specific issue.
Okay. Okay.
Jason, this is Kathy. I have the URS rules up. Under fees, it says complaints listing 15 or more disputed domain names registered by the same registrant will be subject to a response fee, which will be refundable to the prevailing party. Under no circumstances shall the response fee exceed the fee charged to the complainant. I think that may be what's being referred to here, and that is 2.2 of the URS policy.
Okay, so that's helpful. So maybe we should reframe the question as I'm assuming there's a question of whether that's fair or adequate. So perhaps we could rephrase the question. What was that section again, Kathy?
2.2 of the URS policy. Let me actually check the right of it's just called the URS.
Okay.
So 2.1, just for full disclosure.
Yeah.
So the section is called fees, number two. 2.1 is fees, and it's not a full sentence. Fees as set for in the provider's fee schedule shall be submitted with the filed complaint. And then 2.2, complaints listing 15 or more disputed names shall be subject to the response fee. I'll put the text in the, I can't cut and paste this version. So I think what you said makes sense, Jason.
Right. Or maybe we could make it even just a broad question on are practitioners aware of and satisfied with the fee structure? And then if someone has an issue, they could raise it. Because I'm not really sure what this was. No one's claiming authorship here, so if we want to just throw a question out that are people satisfied and aware of the fee structure for the URS, and that's a broad question, they can answer however they see fit. Maybe that may make sense. Anyone have any thoughts on that?
Well, we could model it on – this is Greg. Sorry to interject. But
go ahead.
We have the question above it is about fees generally, so maybe we can to some extent model it on the one above. You know, it's not perfectly, but at least as a kind of jumping off point. And if they're structured somewhat similar, it probably helps the folks who are answering.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So maybe we could just go there in section number three. Just how do parties? How do parties feel about the response fee for multiple filings? And then, yeah, we could maybe just follow that structure. That could be fine. I mean, I don't necessarily think we need to spend too much time on this.
Kathy, what was that section that you cited? I'm sorry.
I think it was 2.2.
Okay.
Yes, Jason.
Right. Okay, maybe staff, if you could just mirror question three to mirror question two with the subject being the response fee for multiple filings and say maybe identify section 2.2.
It's okay, not really multiple filings, though. It's a filing listing 15 or more domain names.
Ah, yeah, not multiple filings, right. So that's not correct. Zhao, your hand is up.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Could you hear me?
Go ahead, Zhao.
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Okay. The same question is proposed by me. What I really want to see about this is about, because I have working in the I used to work in China organization in the administration center, and we try to propose some internet brand protection mechanism in China to try to connect with some trademark owner and try to help them to use the TMCH and the URS and the UDRP. And when I go in to talk with them, they feel most of them feel about the fee is pretty high for them, so they don't propose the URS or they don't buy the TMCH or something. And I also mentioned in the Asian domain name defender, they also provide the URS service, but I know they began this kind of service since like 2014, but there 4 years they only have received 32 URS proposal. So I think it's not about the multiple fee. Some single fee is also really important. I think the change proposed here may decline my proposal. So I try to convince you guys to not just to mention about the multiple proposal, and we should also focus on some other thing.
Okay. Thank you, Zhao. I think I understand your points. Does question two, if you read question two and question three together, does that cover your concern if you're talking about fees more generally, fees for single filings, fees for multiple domains? If you read question two, does that cover your concerns?
Yeah, I think if you just combine those two questions and put the multiple section 2.2 and just mention about the filing is 50 or more, maybe people will just think we are concerning that people won't propose a multiple U.S. case. But in some real situation, if people won't pay for some single domain name, they also will not consider about there are 50 more. So I think the single one is more important. That's what I mean.
So your concern goes to the cost for a single domain dispute? Is that what you're...
Yeah. It's also really important. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So I think question two may just cover that. If you look at the first question, it says brand owners and practitioners, how do they feel about the URS fee? Is it too high or too low? Is that your concern? Does that answer your client's points and your point?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's
okay, thank you.
Well,
okay. George, you ready for your points?
George Nature, for the record. So I had sent by email a couple of three points to consider. And one was whether or not we should ask if in the tactics and approaches section a question as to whether practitioners believe the relief provided by the URS is adequate, and if not, you know, what kind of relief they want to see, because I think there's been issues with the whole suspension. Things would be interesting to know what the take is from people who are out there and filing these, how they feel about it, and certainly people who, we do get at some of that with some of the questions, we don't really ask that one question. The second point on there is there have been issues with the suspension, so it'd be interesting to get the take of people who've been filing these, whether they've encountered any problems with the relief awarded following a URS decision, and to describe the type of problems they've encountered, because that might be something that we need to make a tweak on if we stick with the suspension. And then finally, on a more substantive issue, you know, we do focus on the clear and convincing, but we don't really go back to the underlying terms of the elements of making out a claim. And the one in particular that I had raised was on the third part, the bad faith registration and use conjunctive requirement, whether that would be a requirement that could be, that folks wanted to change to the bad faith registration or use. And to get, you know, the read on people on both sides of the equation of whether, you know, they're in favor or against it. And that's it.
Okay, thank you, George. And so we have three points there. I guess let's take the first. We should just take the first point in order, and we'll get to the. I mean, let's just go in order, right? So, George, your first point was a more general question about relief, right? Do they feel that relief from the URS is adequate?
Yes.
Okay, and we don't have a question in there already to that point? I'm not sure.
No,
but
we don't have it. We just say, what do you think about the suspension for the duration of the registration? So it doesn't really question the suspension. It just questions whether or not the suspension should be longer or not. So this is more to get to the relief, whether folks, you know, think this suspension is really the right relief to have in a URS or not.
Okay, how does the group feel about adding this question? Any objections, comments? Greg, your hand is up. Is that just still up from before?
Yeah, I guess it's still up from before, and I've got more points after this. I agree with George's suggestion in this case.
Okay.
I'll put my hand down until we
Thank you. All right, Kathy, your hand is up now.
Yeah, Kathy, I had said in the email, and I know it came out just before the meeting, that I thought that the partner to the question that George is asking is also, and so I'll raise it now, is the question of whether practitioners believe the URS is being used for the types of cases for which it was intended, clearly abusive cases. So if we're asking about relief, I think we should also be asking about the nature of the cases themselves. And I don't, as he said with the relief, I don't think we hit either his question or my question square on with the current questions. So I'll put the text of the question that I'm proposing, because it seems to just, in my head, flow very directly from, you know, if we're adding one, we should probably be adding both. Let's ask, you know, the big questions in the room.
Sure, I think.
Thanks.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, why don't you... If you're in the document, maybe you could put that in there, and then we could, you know, I think it makes sense. They would flow together. Fair points. George, your second point is going to asking practitioners of problems of relief, so they're having difficulties in enforcing. Is that what you're getting to, or obtaining the suspension?
Yeah, there were problems in the. Once you got the relief, once you got the decision, there were problems in the suspensions, and there were renewals, and there were names where people, you know, thought they had suspended it, but they weren't, and it kept being used. So he's really getting anecdotes from folks as to what kind of problems that people encountered after they were successful in the URS.
Okay.
And I would imagine there might be problems on the, you know, as well from respondents who prevail, and, you know, their names are somehow or another in limbo, and it takes them a while to get out of limbo. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to know from both sides of the aisle what's going on.
Seems fair.
And I think on Kathy's point, yes, you should ask that question, but they're really two separate questions that you know would follow. They could be put next to each other, but they shouldn't be a conjunctive, you know, question.
Okay. Can you go into the document, or do you want to send your question to staff?
All right, I can do that.
Okay. I think that'll be the most efficient way. And then we have the third question, which is getting into a substantive issue, an issue of that raises the question of what we do with the URS is it opens the door to a lot of issues of whether or not we change the URS in terms of the elements and standards, and that gets into the question of the and/or bad faith and/or use question, which is something that I'm not sure is something we as our group need to bring up, but I mean it's a fair question. It does have wide ranging implications. It may, raise, which obviously if it were implemented, it would change the URS entirely. So it's certainly a fair question to present to the group. I don't know how people feel about that point. I know there were some comments via email. Anybody have any questions or thoughts or concerns on that question?
This is Greg with apologies. Could you restate the question?
It was George's question of raising the point on the third element of changing it from bad faith registration and use to the or conjunctive discussion. And do we raise that here?
Yeah, I support that.
Anyone else have any thoughts?
Yeah, Jason.
Kathy, go ahead. I see you.
With my STI hat on, when we were working on what was adopted, the final rules, the rules that were adopted, we didn't touch this one. We didn't touch it. We adopted what was in the UDRP. So whether if we open up the question, then there's the implication we may be having the URS go, for lack of a better word, inconsistent with the UDRP. Ooh, that may be a question for the co-chairs. Not me now as an individual, but the co-chairs and the new co-chair to be appointed. I don't know. Can we mark this one as potentially very, as one to be discussed with the working group and others? Is this, again, because by asking it, we're implying we might be doing something with it, and I don't know if we're actually considering separating the URS elements from the UDRP elements. That's an issue all its own, and we certainly haven't gotten there as a leadership team or as a working group. So I want to flag that one because I don't want to create expectations in people's minds if it's not something we're going to do. So I'm not sure how to handle this, so let me bring it back to the sub-team. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Greg?
Yeah, I think there's an assumption being made that's not necessarily correct. We are going to review this and the UDRP before we're done, and this question is more than likely to come up in the UDRP as well. So there's no reason not to ask it here and now. So it's really not about inconsistency with the UDRP, although that could be a sub-question if people felt that, that it should be inconsistent. But I think it's really a question that just needs to be asked in and of itself. And when we get to the UDRP, we can ask that question about the UDRP. I'm sure we will. So I don't see a reason not to ask it now. I don't think we're creating any expectations other than that things are on the table. And we've certainly put all sorts of things on the table already. And this is one of them. No reason not to ask the practitioners about this. I think we need to break down the elements and ask questions about them a little bit more than we have. I think that's kind of George's basic point, is that we really skirted the elements in the question. This is really one of the key questions about the elements. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. So it looks like we have a couple of valid points on this, certainly a valid question to be asked, and I think Kathy's raising the important point of, is this something that the working group itself is prepared to take on? I guess at this point we can certainly include the question and identify it, since it sounds like we're not going to have a final document ready for certainly Puerto Rico, and just a guide. I guess we could include it. Anybody have thoughts for or against including it? Anybody object to including it? Okay, it looks like no one's objected to that. Kath, Jay, you object in the chat. Jay, would you like to chime in here? I think the issue that we're faced with is it's certainly a question that's going to come up. I just don't know if this is the appropriate time for it or not, and that's certainly fair. It may, is it an appropriate question for practitioners? Probably. They would probably be very, very well suited to comment on it. I don't know if this is the appropriate time or not, and it sounds like Kathy is not unsure of whether it is the appropriate juncture for this, but we have one voiced objection. We have no other objections for considering the question with some reservations. So, Jay, yes, I see you saying it's not the appropriate time. So we should, at this point, Kathy, do you have any concerns about raising it to the working group?
No, I really think we should maybe flag
okay.
it. Not as an opening question, because I think the working group's going to need to kind of get familiar with where we're going on this and see the questions, but certainly, as something into our conversation on, which is now on Sunday, everybody, the URS practitioners. There's been some changes on that. It's now Sunday so that Jason can join us and lead us. But, yeah, I think it would be good to raise and get people to start thinking about this with us. Thanks.
Excellent. Okay, so let's include the question, and we'll note it, and at least it'll be alerted we'll alert the working group that this is under consideration. Greg, your hand is still up.
There are a couple of other notes that I had on things that weren't quite questioned. And the like, under practical issues, there's a statement after the question, which has been edited to, if you are a registrant, how did you learn about the responses to the URS and the affirmative defenses? After that, there's this kind of a note, question about URS awareness generally and how it is disseminated to brand owners and others and the effectiveness of that.
Mm-hmm.
Either that should be a question or it should be removed.
Sure.
Someone turn it into a question. Kind of a similar thing under tactics and approaches. The fourth one begins with whether or not there should be something analogous for the URS that gives more certainty to the structure. I think the rest of the question has makes sense, but this does not seem like a good intro. Again, I think this is something from kind of the musing version.
I actually think that was I edited that question. I actually struck that part and then included the overview of URS similar to WIPO's overview. So I don't know why. I mean, it seems like, I agree, it seems like the second part of that covers whatever the intent was of the first point.
It was not a deleted in the Google Doc, so I just did it.
Yeah, okay.
In the Google Doc for that one. Let me see if I have
okay.
Things. I think that covers my points, and if there are any left, they'll be, hanging around the document. I'll get to them at some point. I don't want to keep us any longer. Thanks.
Okay. Fair enough. So I guess if, the point, if you go to practical issues, section practical issues 1, 2, 3, 4, so this would be 5, 6, this would be, I guess, the sixth point there. Maybe we should make that a separate question and make it it looks like a broad question about awareness of the URS, so I don't think there's any harm in doing that, and certainly helps to clarify what that is. Okay, Kathy, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Okay, let's see. The GDPR, there's a question about the GDPR under substantive issues. I think we should move it to, one of the lower practical, probably under practical issues. Can't tell you exactly which one it is now, but.
GDPR is under, looks like it's under burden of proof, number 9. Is that?
Yeah, can we use that to practical issues?
Please, yes. Let's do that.
Okay. Can I just go through a little checklist here?
Sure.
Okay. To George's question about do you believe the remedy provided by the URS is adequate, I'm not trying to yell in the chat room by putting it in caps. I just wanted to show where I was proposing we add the terms why or why not. Let's get some explanation here about what it is that they're concerned about. And then we'll understand better what the remedy is they're trying to propose. So to that, and to George's question about problems with the relief awarded. George's, I wanted to ask you about that. You saw in the email, no objection to the question. I just think we should clarify. Are you asking, have you encountered any problems with the suspension of a domain name after it's been awarded, or any problems, say, with the one-year extension of the domain name, which a trademark owner would be entitled to? Can we clarify this and make it kind of technically specific for the types of problems that we're trying to identify? I think it might help practitioners respond. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Two good points. So we'll move the GDPR question. And I guess if George is, can put some clarity around that question. And then we can include it. Okay. Barring any further points or questions on the document, I think we're ready to move to the second part of this. We have only a few minutes left anyway. The second part of our agenda was to go over the practitioner's spreadsheet, which we spent most of the call last week discussing the methodology behind it and how we were going to proceed. I don't know if we have that open, if we can open that in front of us. It looks like staff did a great job taking that document, taking the data, and doing the data sort. My understanding is that in the last call, we all agreed that we would as a methodology, be okay with having the group's shortlist coupled with the what the data revealed in the cases. Obviously, we all know this is far from a complete list. It is not, of a complete universe of all cases, but we did our best to each individually review a set of cases and identify the parties. So, that's on screen. When you sorted this, you have the two columns, right? Cases total, what that means. So the first one that shows they had 74 cases, is that what you found, Julie?
Hi, Jason. Actually, I'll note Greg has his hand up because what I have put in the room is the latest version that Greg sent around, and he had updated the numbers, so I'm going to defer to him.
Okay. Greg, go ahead.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks, Jason. What I did was just to go in and search to try to find the total number of cases in the entire URS universe for those that we had identified. Using the full text searching and then, you know, checking them for false positives as much as I could. So found that in our sample, the Rauschhofer firm had 35 cases, although there's actually two different ways it's identified, so it had more like 40 plus. In the total, it had 74 cases. NameShield went up from 37 to 53. Staub's from 37 to 53. Sorry, NameShield went to 73. In many cases, it was we were fairly accurate. I did note that what was listed as Alibaba Group Holding, in fact, if you go to the ADNDRC website, you'll see that they do list respondents, but not on the in the chart, only when you go to the individual cases. All of the Alibaba cases were handled by Mayor Brown JSM, which I assume is a Asian part of Mayor Brown. Or a semi-affiliate, whatever. So, you know, the ones that went up the most were McDermott, Insiders, and IBM, just, you know, due to the luck of the draw in a semi-random sampling. Also, Frost Zelnick went from 3 to 13. So this is actually sorted by the total cases column. So they're in that order and not in the order they were previously, which was based on the sample. So this is, in essence, a more accurate to the extent possible. Also see that a number of practitioners that came up only with one or two cases in our sample actually had as many as seven cases or eight cases or 10 cases when you searched for the firm on a word search basis. This was generally more the case for outside counsel than for those handling it themselves, but not entirely. Again, it's just that's what happens when you have a semi-random sample. You get
okay,
find.
Thank you.
So that's what we got in front of us. That's the first tab. We can talk about the second tab second, but that's enough on this one.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you for that work. Anybody have any comments on using this list? Any concerns, questions, comments? No hands, no concerns, no thoughts. Okay. What was the second tab, Greg?
The second tab is the practitioners from subteam, and maybe staff can put that up. It should be in the PDF.
Did you made changes to that as well? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Staff, okay. Let me, okay, so is that the spreadsheet? I only have one PDF from you.
If you turn to page 7 of the what's in the currently in the chat room.
Okay.
It's actually a funky PDF for which I apologize. I was doing it at, you know, 2 minutes before the call, but this I thought was useful to see in terms of the suggestions from the subteam members. You know, how many and what type of experience they've actually had with the URS, because I'm still somewhat concerned personally with this, with the idea, or at least we need to more accurately decide why we're having people comment. So if you found that page 7,
yes,
basically shows that
this is where it starts with David Taylor having 18 yeah. cases. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, what we see here is that, you know, some of the people, three of the people we named had, you know, a bunch of cases, really four, I would say, to be fair. David Taylor, Doug Eisenberg, Julius Staub's, and John Berryhill all had, a plurality of cases. And, you know, John's cases, no surprise, all for respondent. Everyone else on the list, including Zach Muscovich, we're all for complainant. then, you know, so David Doug and Stobbs had three big numbers. Richard Biagi mm-hmm. had two, Zach and David Weslow, Wiley Ryan, who I know does a lot of UDRP cases, but doesn't look like he's wandered into this particular circus more than once. And lastly, you know, we named Flip Petillon, but Flip actually hasn't brought or defended any cases. Interestingly, he's heard 18 cases as an examiner, Doug Eisenberg, on top of the 25 cases he has been a representative in. And then David Bernstein and Mark Monitor had no cases at all, notably, and not to compare, you know, Mark Monitor to a competitor, but CSC had seven cases.
So Mark Monitor had absolutely no case. Would they be identified in a different way?
I tried a number of different ways. You know, you could certainly ask, you know, somebody from Mark Monitor whether this is accurate, but, and I was surprised too. You know, I even searched for the word monitor on its own. I mean, it was just, you know, not there. So, you know, this gets back to the idea of whether we're asking these, to the extent we're asking people who've done a ton of cases. Obviously, we've selected three, but that doesn't count for, or four, sorry. John's number, while small, is, by comparison, is way ahead of anybody else in the respondents bar, which essentially for repeat cases is John Berryhill. There's so many defaults and so many self-representations and the like in that, on that side of the ledger. So,
and that's not necessarily surprising, right? I mean,
no,
given the nature of the U.S. Right.
In a sense, if it works, if people really bring only slam dunk cases, a lot of times the respondents are just going to look at this and say, I try.
That's right.
So really it's the tougher cases or those where, so I guess the question is, if we're including people who have no cases at all, are we can't really classify them as URS practitioners.
Well, I think let's frame the question
different, you know, as kind of pundits or experiences with domain, you know, disputes generally.
Right.
I think the only thing to avoid is somehow elevating opinions of certain members of this working group above others because they've been put on this list.
Right. So let's put the question to the group. I think we have two hands up at the moment, but I think the point that's raised here is, you know, we have a couple of practitioners that were included in the list that appear to have no experience whatsoever. The question is, do we strike people with zero? That's one question. But before we get to that, I know Petter has his hand up and Kathy has her hand up. So Petter, go ahead.
Thanks, Petter here. Well, I can start with reply to your last question. I think we should not reach out to those that have zero cases. And that was also my general question. I missed the meeting last week. Have we made any decisions yet if we should reach out to each practitioner on the list here, or should we focus on those that at least have some experience, not just 2, 3, 4 cases. At the moment at least, it's my opinion that it would be better to reach out to those that have experience in at least there are not so many, but let's say from around 8 and up, because they can also answer the questions with more general experience on all the topics, and I presume that they have handled cases in different ways. However, we should also, as we saw on the list where we went through all the cases, those that have enormous amount of cases, it may well be for the same client, more or less the same trademarks. But still, they have dealt with a number of URS. And as I said, I don't think we should reach out to each of them, not those that just have made dealing with one or two cases. And when it comes to practitioners that have been for the domain holders, even if there may be significant fewer number of those, at least most of the cases there is no reply at all and no attorney, and also difficult to reach out to the domain holder to get a response on our questions. So I think it's important to take those handful of traditional IP practitioners that have also represented domain holders in URS cases to get their input on the questions we have on what is CLV used. So thanks.
Okay, thank you, Petr. I think there were a couple points there. I know we had addressed many of these on the last call in terms of trying to come to consensus on how we would handle those that had what appear to be fewer cases than those that appear to have a large volume. I think part of this comes down to, as we I think you had said, or Greg had said, that, you know, it's not surprising that respondents or those that represent respondents would have far, far fewer cases than those that are prosecuting these actions because of the nature of the URS. So I know Kathy's hand is up. I'm actually, staff, I'm trying to get back into the room. I was knocked out of the room, so if you could let me back in.
Great. Thanks, Jason. It's Kathy, and then George's and Greg are also in the queue, just so
okay.
You know who's ahead. So I'm going to raise some procedural questions. First, huge thanks to Greg for the amazing research. Greg, you are the researcher extraordinaire. Question for Julie, and sorry if this went through the chat. What we're seeing on the screen and what we're seeing in the Google room are different. So is what we're seeing on the screen now that Greg provided, will that become our Google Doc?
Hi, excuse me, this is Julie from staff. It certainly can.
I sent a Google link around. This is Greg. I sent a Google link around and I made it share. Everyone can view, but I can change that to everyone can comment, however you want to do that.
Greg, let me just ask, are there any other changes other than kind of the adding of the numbers? Has anything else, like substantive, been changed, or can we just swap one document for the other, basically?
I removed columns on the first page that were on the right-hand side that seemed to be kind of, I thought they were artifacts. They listed respondent side information, but since we were, you know, looking at people with multiple cases, the ones on the other side were just for a single case of that particular person, so it probably was just one of those things that as things got cut and pasted, you know, one stray respondent line was brought in along with the line for the complainant's person. So that's what was removed. You can go back and look. I removed everything, added obviously the column that I added and the notes I added, but then removed kind of the – I also removed columns that were there for email and contact, which we probably want to put in back in since we're going to, I presume, use this to actually go ahead and track these, you know, contact them and invite them to participate.
Right, but maybe under GDPR we don't want to post them in public documents, so that may have been wise to review them before
too.
We put them
yeah.
into a common chat, you know, a community area in Puerto Rico. Okay, sounds good. So I'd like to propose that your documents become our base documents then. And further propose that page 7, where we're looking at the practitioner, the ones we suggested, that the suggestions from the sub-team members. So if I remember correctly, we were brainstorming on our first meeting, so which I guess was last week, only last week. And so I'd like to recommend that we reorder this from most to fewest. So Stobbs, Julius E. Stobbs will be number one. and put, you know, the zeros at the bottom and, you know, maybe draw a line before we get to the zeros and consider that people we thought might have been very active URS practitioners turn out not to be and consider I'd like to propose we consider not contacting them. A question for Greg. Are we looking at, and it was a question I had when I was doing the major spreadsheet, we have multiple domain names per case in many cases. Are these counts the number of cases or the number of domain names?
Definitely the number of cases and not the number of domain names. And I found a few cases where I think we were trying to do cases in the previous draft, but may have ended up accidentally doing domain names. So since I was going off of the database results in the forum database, that always groups them only by case.
Terrific. Thanks. And I'd like to propose we go with at least 5 cases and up because, of course, we don't want to take off John Berryhill because he may be our only major respondent person, and obviously we want that view as well. Anyway, thanks. Jason, are you back online?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
The contact email information was not actually there. There were just columns for it. So at some point,
right.
our working document, you know, to be seen on by almost no one, which will have their contact information, will have to be, you know, somebody will have to be the steward of that document so we can actually find these people.
Right, and I think that was part of the point of last call was to make sure that we're going to be able to help staff cover that because in most cases we'll know, hopefully everyone, but there may be cases where there's fall through the cracks. Okay, so I think Kathy's suggestion would go with substituting your doc for the working doc is fine. Anybody object to that? No? Okay. George, your hand is up.
Sure. George Janicevansky for the record. So I just wanted to touch back on to the point of the folks that we're going to contact. As I understood it, I guess from Kathy's email, the co-chairs had made a decision that we really ought to focus on our practitioners, and I, looking at the questions, that makes sense to have practitioners do that, but the question that I have is, are we at any point, not necessarily in our group, but as part of the working group, going to look at the broader question as to why or why not people are using URS, and there may be a lot of practitioners out there who use the UDRP but have decided not to use the URS. So, you know, at what point in our whole process will that part of it come out? Maybe Kathy can answer that because you might have had discussions with the co-heads on that.
May I respond, Jason?
Go ahead, Kathy.
George, I think that's a great question. I think we should talk to the working group about this. Add it as a later question in our section in Puerto Rico. Is that a good answer? I mean, there, you know, and then we can talk about resource issues as well. But it's really, okay. Thanks.
So this is Greg. If I could follow on that, one thought I had was to take, you know, some of the usual suspects, like David Bernstein, for instance, who I think, and try to see who are the, you know, most numerous, regardless of who they represent, or which side they tend to show up on the UDRP, who don't show up on our URS list, ask them. I wouldn't ask them all the questions we're asking here because a lot of that is just then going to be spitballing, which is not what we're looking for. But I think we should have some questions for them, in particular, why they're not using it and what might be changed so that they would find it useful because we do want someone, you know, who's been around the larger issue of domain disputes to have some input to our group on the URS, just not as URS practitioners, but we definitely need to hear from them. And we may even want to try, and this is just, I'm really spitballing here, there are some people who've only had one or two, really only one, URS on the respondent side, but, you know, have, you know, done, you know, either they've gotten the claim denied or it's really been a very substantive decision in response. You know, and they're kind of, you know, people who would normally find themselves in disputes. You know, I'm kind of laying aside some of the pro se responses that were kind of, you know, earnest but very unintelligible. Right. And I don't know if we want to know about something from those people too. We do want to try to get some respondent side experience beyond John somehow.
Right. I think you know, if we went, just to jump in here, I know we're already 13 minutes over time. I think we did delve into that last week with, you know, our call. I think it's, and Scott just raised a good point of in the chat about one case could be instructive. We'll resort the list. We'll have a cutoff. We can then evaluate how many fall into the sub five category and then make a determination on whether it's onerous or whether it would be difficult to contact the remaining people and see if that even makes a difference. I think it really comes down to how long that list is and what staff is able to do. I mean, if we're sending out we don't even know how we're distributing this yet, but if we're sending out an email or we're just doing a poll, maybe it will be a moot point. I mean, you know, adding 10 new parties that have one or two cases might not be problematic, but I think we could certainly, it's a fair question to figure out how we tackle that.
I think lastly, when we get the kind of the next cleanish looking draft of the questions, we have to think about whether we're asking so much that we're going to have a rotten response rate or people
right.
are going to curse us for life, and ways that we might, you know, either ask the questions that could be in some cases answered by you know, multiple choice or, you know, click the box answers. Not saying all of them can, but I think we'll need to structure this so that we get as much information from as many people as possible without making them want to kill us.
Fair, because these are not the people that are on the working groups by and large, so we're the ones that self-selected. They haven't. Good points. Okay. Anyone else? Julie, go ahead.
Thanks, Jason. So if we're done with this discussion, I just wanted to ask some practical questions. For example, what do we want to use for our presentation on Sunday? Do we want any slides, or do we want to just distribute a clean version, you know, whatever is the latest version of the questions and of the spreadsheet? And also with respect to them, those two items, as particularly the questions, at what point do we want to cut it off? I know some folks are in there editing now. Staff have some edits to make from today's call, but so that's my question. I see Kathy saying slides of the questions and practitioners list. I can see putting the questions in slides, although that even of itself will be quite lengthy. The practitioners lists could be also quite lengthy. So just putting the question out there.
Okay. If we don't use slides, how would you propose distributing? Just distributing sheets to the working group?
Exactly. I think we should do that in any case. Distribute the, download the questions as a Word doc and, you know, as a PDF and send it around. Do the same with the spreadsheet, and do it that way. But, you know, if people feel strongly about having slides, we can do slides, just recognizing that it will be a lot of slides, just to get the text on there without it being minuscule.
Right.
This is Greg. Do we want to have slides that describe kind of what we've done and where we are, kind of intro what we've, you know, kind of done? Or do we just want to talk it through? No reason to make extra work for people. Don't have to have slides for everything or acronyms for everything.
Sure. Well, Kathy, go ahead. I was about to ask you what you were thinking about how we're going to be presenting it anyway. So go ahead.
Well, Jason, ultimately, you know, I think you're going to be the one in front of the room, so your views matter a lot. I'm a big fan of slides, of putting in front of people what we want them to consider, but I don't want to add a ton of work for Julie. So certainly the questions for the URS practitioners, I'm looking at them It looks like it's 3 pages on Google Doc right now. And when we add some space and, you know, numbering and some line, you know, space between the lines, it will be long. But I think it's something, Jason, that you'll be able to flip through the procedural issues, substantive issues. Once everything's lettered and numbered, it'll be our outline, really, for what we're doing. But also, you know our working group. They're going to want to see the details, right? And we're asking them some specific questions, so we may as well do both. You know, maybe give them the documents so they can by attachment. But we also often have people in these community rooms that don't have their computers open or aren't part of our lists.
I was thinking that maybe you could have. I don't know if it would fit, but couldn't we chunk down the questions, to a slide or two in each section?
Yes, absolutely.
So that might be an easy thing to put up and then have that as a reference point. On the issue of the practitioners list, surely we could do page 7 as a slide, but as far as I don't know how we deal with the pages 1 through 1 through 6. Is that Let's see. It's 1 through... Yeah.
Shall we have a slide or two that shows from
it's
like
really
1
only
and
1
two?
Through 3. We could show this. I don't think there's not to. It's just 3 pages. And we can...
Alright, so 1 through 3, yeah. No, that's an illustrative of kind of the points that we're discussing there.
And we can make the left-hand column can be much narrower, without having too many things go to 2 rows, and that'll make everything, larger on the screen. And as a production point.
Okay.
That sounds great.
This is Julie, good. Just to confirm from staff. So you're saying to put the entire list of the both slides, both what we currently have in the PDF as page 7 as a slide, that's easy enough, that's not a lot. But pages 1 through 3, put those on a slide or just show those pages? Because if you blew it on a slide, it's gonna be many, many slides, even at a small font.
Can you show it on screen as is and it would be legible?
We can show the PDF. And keeping in mind, too, that people generally also use the Adobe Connect room, and what we can do is the same thing we can do here, where we can unsync it and people can make the document larger, so, then it won't be so small. We'll take that, we'll get those out, if not today, tomorrow. Perhaps we can give it to old COB today in case anybody have any further changes to the questions that they might want to make, and then I could suggest that we get documents and slides out for folks tomorrow.
Julie, let me ask you, there's a number of questions that are now in the right-hand column. Would you be adding those, or should we be adding those? I think you're kind of holding the pen right now on some of the notes after night, if that's why I'm asking.
I'm going to add the ones that have been raised here, and I hadn't heard objections to resolving ones that have been added in the text. So I was going to go ahead and accept all of the changes. My only question was that I've noticed there were a couple people who were actually in the Google Doc, so, at some point we're just going to have to cut it off, we won't have the latest version. So I'm suggesting maybe we cut it off at the end of the day today, and then I'll just accept all the changes and add in what we have from today's call.
Okay. And Julie, do you want to do the numbering, kind of creating the outline so that all the topics have, A, B, C, and then all the questions are numbered, or do you want one of us to do that?
Oh, I'm happy to do that. I'm just going to say I'm going to make all of the changes. None of you have to make any changes, but if you are so inclined and you happen to be in the document now or this afternoon and want to make some changes, please go ahead. Just recognize that, say, by tomorrow morning, I'm going to just go ahead and accept what's in there, make the final changes, do the numbering, and finish it off, and then produce the slides as well.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. I think that sounds good. Thank you very much, Julie, for your help on that. And thank you, everyone, for participating on this call. If everyone could agree to, you know, if you're going to make a final edit, make it now so that Julie can do the final cutoff. Thanks, everyone. And I guess, barring any other points, let's conclude and have a great trip.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Jason, for sharing. Thanks, all, and sorry to keep you all on, but it was very, very helpful. Safe travels for those who are going to Puerto Rico.
Thank you.
Bye, all. And sorry for keeping you all on.
And once again, thank you for joining. The meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.